Very special guest today. Her name today, her name is Bridget Gabriel. She is the founder of an organization called Act for America, which gives voice to Americans seeking to confront radical Islam. She's author of multiple books, including They Must Be Stopped, Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam, and How We Can Do It. I was born to an immigrant Christian family in Lebanon and famous for her compelling story of survival during the Lebanese Civil War. And she has become one of the foremost voices for American strength in the face of the global jihad against civilization, featured on Fox News and other networks, I'm sure. Ms. Gabriel, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Ty. I'm delighted to be with you.
For our listeners, if you would, kind of go over, if you would, your personal story. Many people know it, some people don't, but tell us that and how you came into the position that you've come to as a spokesperson against the Islamic Jihad.
Well, I am very driven to speak about and increase people's awareness about the threat of radical Islam to world peace and our national security, because radical Islam affected my life personally. My 9/11 happened to me in Lebanon in 1975.
Wow.
When the radical Islamist blew up my home, bringing it down, burying me under the rubble, wounded, as they shouted Allahu Akbar. I ended up in a hospital for 2.5 months, and later when I left the hospital, my home was no longer the home I left. I ended up living in a bomb shelter underground with my parents in an 8x10 room without electricity, without water, and very little food. We had to crawl under the bombs to dig out some dandelions and different greenery that grew around our bomb shelter, because that was the only salads, the only greenery we had to eat. To get some water, we would crawl to a nearby spring to get the water under snipers' bullets. This became my existence for 7 years of my life, from the age of 10 till the age of 17, living like this, robbed of my youth. I ended up moving when Israel came into Lebanon in 1982 and drove out the Palestinians and the Muslims away from our area. I ended up moving to Israel and becoming a news anchor for World News in the Middle East in the 80s, between 1984 and 1989. And that's when I started realizing that what people used to think, or as I reported on world events and world activities night after night, I started realizing that no matter where the terrorist activity happened around the world, the name of the perpetrators were always Muslims. Ahmed, Muhammad, Hussein, Ali. The name of the victims were always Westerners.
Isn't that interesting? That's consistent, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And the victims were always Westerners, Christians, and Jews. Hmm. Terry Waite, Terry Anderson, Colonel Higgins, the Achille Lauro, the TWA, the Pan Am flights. I can go on and on. And I realized, Ty, that what I used to think was a regional problem between a majority Muslim Middle East trying to kill or expel the minority Christians and Jews had become a worldwide problem, but the world was not paying attention. So that's why when I speak today about radical Islam as an American living in the United States right now, married to an American with American children, I realize that we are dealing with a threat. And when I speak about radical Islam, I not only speak as a survivor of Islamic terror who lived to tell about it, but also as a terrorism expert who followed this, as a journalist who followed this from the 80s. And that's why we need to wake up our country and realize this did not start yesterday. It did not start on September 11th. We better wake up in this country and realize what we're dealing with.
You know, I'm as guilty as anybody. The terrorism was something that I watched on TV. Most Americans watched on TV until 9/11. And then as the World Trade Centers came down, it all became something that we all have to deal with. And for some strange reason, for politically correct reasons or whatever, we don't necessarily deal with it very effectively. I mean, we did take out Osama bin Laden this last week. And I'd love to hear your assessment of that and how that was handled by this administration. And does that change anything?
Well, it was a great victory for the United States to be able to, 10 years after September 11th, to say we killed Osama bin Laden. We got him. It's a great symbolic victory for America, because it not only encourages Americans that something is happening, we are winning something in this war, because let's face it, things can be very depressing at times, especially
yes.
when we hear the repeated attacks by homegrown terrorism like we have heard the last 2 years. Did it deal a great blow to Al-Qaeda? Of course it did. We killed the head of Al-Qaeda. But let's keep in mind that really in the big scheme of things, it doesn't really change things that much. because Al-Qaeda right now is practically run under an American leadership. And what I mean by that is the heir to Osama bin Laden is Imam al-Awlaki, an American born in New Mexico, went to school in Arizona, was an imam to a mosque in San Diego as well as in Virginia, and he is now the head of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. The spokesperson for Al-Qaeda is Adam Gadam, a man from California. He is the one who made the statement. He wants to see the streets run red with blood, American streets. Again, a Jew converted to Islam. The chief operations for Al-Qaeda right now is a man from Tampa, Florida, by the name of Adnan Shukri Jum'a, a Muslim son of an imam raised in a mosque in Tampa, Florida. The Samir Khan, the editor-in-chief for Al-Qaeda magazine, Inspire magazine, for recruiting from the West in English, is a man from North Carolina, a Baptist converted to Islam. So just because we killed Osama bin Laden, our war with radical Islam is not over.
Why do you think that for whatever reason we don't have the political will as a country? Or why do you think our politicians don't talk honestly and openly about the problem we have with radical Islam?
Because, again, they lost their tongue to political correctness for two reasons. They are controlled, one, by the Islamic reaction. Anytime they open their mouth and speak about something that's happening, they are called Islamophobes, Islamic bigots, racists, and every other word in the book. They are also controlled by the extreme left, like the ACLU and MoveOn.org, who also start screaming discrimination out of sheer ignorance of the facts, because they are very emotional about the reaction to Islamic terrorism and them trying to appear being, you know, very tolerant and very open-minded without basing their information on any facts except for emotions. So two things are putting pressure on our elected officials. Ignorance by the Western elites and the Western media.
A lot of that.
And also by pressure by a very organized Islamic front, like CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, ISNA, Islamic Society of North America, Muslim Student Associations, the MSA, and I can go on. And all these are fronts for the Muslim Brotherhood organization in the United States, a terrorist organization. So you've got our enemy controlling our elected officials, as well as the apathy and ignorance on the part of our own American members who are controlling elected officials. And that's working against protecting our country and those of us who are trying to speak sense into our elected officials and training them.
You know, I've heard you say that these Islamic extremists would like to have Sharia law here in this country. And I believe that you'd mentioned maybe in one of your books that there are banks that are already Sharia law compliant. Speak about that just a second for our listeners, what Sharia law is and how that could affect our way of life.
Great point, especially a lot of your listeners are in finance. What's been happening for the last few years, the last 10 years, is Wall Street has been bombarded by a one-way advertising campaign coming out of the Islamic world, specifically out of Saudi Arabia, telling bankers and consultants on Wall Street that if you introduce Islamic Sharia-compliant financing, you will have 1.2 billion Muslims knocking on your doors to do business with you, because according to Islamic religion, you know, we have certain practices and certain laws that we have to abide by. And they are selling these Sharia-compliant financing instruments to Wall Street as ethical, moral, high value, very good for the family, very clean. And what they are not telling these banks, and by the way, these banks are jumping on these because there's a great money-making opportunity for the consultants, for the lawyers, for the banking firms who introduce it. But what these Muslim mullahs are not telling the bankers is that under Sharia-compliant financing, these instruments, these funds and mutual funds and et cetera, cannot be used in investing in defense contracts, for example, that support the United States military, because now the United States military is fighting in Islamic land.
Wow.
They cannot support Israel or anything dealing with Israel, because Israel is the enemy of the Islamic world. They cannot invest or support anything in pharmaceutical companies such as birth control pills, such as AIDS, such as these type of investments, because, again, they are forbidden under Islam. But what they are, the way they're trying to sell these instruments to the bankers is, you know, they do not invest in gambling, which is, of course, nice. A lot of born-again Christians in America do not want to invest in gambling.
Right.
They do not support, drinking, alcohol, prostitution, which is fine. I mean, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and every other Christian preacher will line behind you when it comes to that language. And that's where we are losing our banking institutions in the United States, because they are jumping on this Sharia compliant finance without really kicking the tires and doing their due diligence to find out where the money is going. The most important thing about Sharia finance that we need to be careful about is a percentage, 2% minimum, has to go from these Sharia compliant financing to zakat, which is the duty that Muslims have to pay for religious observance.
That's in the documents of the Sharia law compliant financing.
Right. It says a percentage of that money has to go to zakat, which is, you know, that what you give to Islamic charities. The problem is
financing
that in the
terrorism.
Last 10 years, we have identified 27 Islamic charities as funds for terrorism. September 11th attack was funded by Sharia compliant financing. And the mullahs who are making that decision, because in order for you to introduce Sharia compliant finance, you have to have a mullah on the board of that bank, paid by the bank, in order to oversee that these instruments are conducted according to Sharia finance. These mullahs are the ones who are giving the approval as to which charity the zakat should be given to.
That
so we have the
is
fox
unbelievable.
Watching the hen house when it comes to this stuff.
That is unbelievable. If I just heard what you said right, the Sharia compliant financing that's done on Wall Street now is essentially controlled by mullahs, and money goes to finance terrorist acts. That's what you just said, right?
Correct. A percentage of that money goes to finance terrorist acts. And for more information in detail about what I just said, if you go to actforamerica.org and click on our video site, actforamerica.org, and click on videos, we have different videos about Sharia compliant financing. One in particular, very easy and simple to understand, called Jihad with Money, which is what Sheikh Al-Qardawi, the most notorious radical sheikh and imam in the radical Islamic world today, calls Sharia compliant finance, Jihad with Money. He was actually one of the people who initiated the Sharia compliant financing worldwide. He is the equivalent of Imam Khomeini, Ayatollah Khomeini, when Ayatollah Khomeini came back to Iran. He is actually the one who went back to Egypt after Mubarak was overthrown from power, or when he resigned, because he was in exile as the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, the terrorist organization in Egypt, and went back and conducted the first prayer services on a Friday, calling for the death of the Jews, with 2.5 million people in Tahrir Square screaming jihad, jihad, all the way to Jerusalem.
I've got one more minute, and I'd love to hear your assessment here. The Pakistan, its role in the war on terror, it seems very clear to me that they're double dealing. They're taking our money, and they're also at the same time supporting the Islamic radicals and jihad. Love to hear your opinion.
Yes, they are. Obviously, we knew something was very shady with Pakistan, but what confirmed what the rest of the American public knew is that even our own government knew we cannot trust the Pakistanis, and this is exactly why they went solo without telling or alerting the Pakistani government of what we were doing to get Osama bin Laden. You cannot avoid the fact that Osama bin Laden was living less than a mile next to the biggest military training and intelligence facility in Pakistan. His next-door neighbor was one of the top chief intelligence officers in Pakistan. You cannot tell us that anybody in the Pakistani military did not know that Osama bin Laden was there. Despite all the money we were giving them supposedly to give us intelligence, they have betrayed us in the worst manner. And this is why we at Act for America are urging our elected officials to investigate Pakistan. We have a petition on the website right now that I encourage people to go check and sign. We are calling upon Congress through its pertinent committees to investigate how bin Laden could have lived for so long under the noses of Pakistani officials, and to initiate appropriate sanctions such as cutting, suspending, or ending of foreign aid to Pakistan if it is determined Pakistan did not act as an ally in America's 10-year search for Osama bin Laden. This is so important for our elected officials to feel the heat by the American people, to hold them accountable, to make sure they hold Pakistan accountable as to why we squandered billions of dollars at the feet of swine, thinking they're going to help us, and only to find out that we have been betrayed in the biggest way.
We're talking today to Brigitte Gabriel. She is the author of a number of books, including They Must Be Stopped and Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It. That website address one more time, please.
Actforamerica.org.
Actforamerica.org. Miss Gabriel, thank you so much for being with us. I'd love to do it again.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Take care now.
Thank you.
All right.